Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are in the Cafe Book Club. Ooh, we're talking about getting the love you really want with Harville Hendricks and his lovely wife, Helen Hunt. She doesn't really get credit. Does she get credit in the later editions? Because the first edition I have was back about 30 years ago. Her name is on it.
I really love her in the movies. I think she's really great in all her movies.
No. That's a different act. That's a different person.
What?
Wouldn't that be fascinating if it really was the same person? I think that would be really kind of cool. But actually, it's not. So, is she, if that Helen Hunt, is she, you know, Harville's wife, is she listed in the newer editions?
Yes.
She is. Okay. Okay, yes, so that's cool. And so we're already talking already.
Are you going to introduce us to the table? Are you going to bring us to the table?
I'm going to do that right now. Yeah, because we're already talking. So I want to welcome my co-host, Miss Amy Frost. How are you tonight, Miss Amy?
I've got my maracas on because I am ready to do the amigo.
Okay, she's doing the amigo. And they're like, what the heck is an amigo? And we have our lovely, lovely co-host, Miss Michelle. Hey, Michelle, how are you tonight?
Woo-hoo. Just call me Coco.
Okay, Coco.
I like it.
Are you going to be the grandma who, you know, if anybody's seen Coco, oh, I love Coco. That's such a good movie. And it's such a good, that's really good because that's such a movie about relationships. Good job. Good job, Michelle. I don't know if you did that on purpose. I bet you did. Anyway. Okay, Coco. So tonight we're in chapter 3, and we're going to be talking about the amigo. We were playing with it a little bit before we got on the air, like, I'm a go, I'm a not a gonna go. So, and everybody's just like, what the heck is an amigo? And amigo is, it's actually from the Latin word that means image. Everybody goes, ooh, image. Okay, so what does that mean? So this chapter is very, very interesting. And Michelle, I would love for you to talk about it because this is your, when we started looking at different books and things like that, I'm always asking friends and, you know, what's a book that you really love? And she loves this book, but in particularly this chapter. So I'd love for you to just kind of take it and talk about it a little bit, just as an overview of what we're going to go for tonight.
Well, the imago, I believe you say imago, is your ideal mate. And it talks about why we choose the people we choose. And what the real thing that's happening when we quote-unquote fall in love, it's really an imago match.
Imago match. I like that. Imago match. Nice. So how about you, Aime?
Well, it came to me as I just kind of going through it again today. I mean, it really is beautifully crafted, and it affects all areas of your life. It talks about on page 36 how your old brain is trying to resolve conditions from your upbringing by bringing people into your life now to help you heal that.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes perfect sense.
Well, I love the just even the first page because, you know, Harville talks immediately, you know, it's like we always think that we're, before we really start getting into relationships, when we look at, when we look at our relationships with what we've had with our mother and father and our even just caretakers in our early life, we're always thinking to ourselves, oh, I'm never going to marry, you know, if there was, one of them had issues with alcohol or whatever, I'm not going to marry somebody who's got those issues or whatever that thing is that we consider, a negative in our lives. And we always say, I'm not going to be that and I'm not going to be attracting that. Ultimately, with, I actually call this show the yin and yang of relationships because we're really looking for that those opposites of ourselves to balance ourselves. So it really comes from that looking for the places in our lives to really complete us. And I think that's something that's really just so really interesting. I love how you're talking about the old brain and the new brain too, because that's something that's very interesting in the chapter. You know, it's about being able to search for our and one of the important things about looking for those opposites is having the need that we want to find our lost selves. Because as we're, one thing that he talks about is our brains actually take in everything. They take in all the information with all the different relationships and everything that we've had. And then with the old brain, it basically just starts putting it in, taking all this information and just saying that this is basically like one person's persona of a combination of a whole bunch of people. So it's really interesting the way that, you know, it's said that, you know, we don't forget anything. And I just think if a brain surgeon actually activated certain parts of her brain, they said that, you know, they've done it in research, that the certain parts of the brain, that all these memories are released, and there's just an amazing amount of detail that we can basically just go back to. And I find, I'm in my 50s now, and I go, really? Oh, my God. That's kind of like kind of scary and exciting at the same time. You know, how many things would I really want to remember as opposed to forget? So any of that stuff you guys found was interesting?
Well, Amy here, I love that whole thing, and I really am excited about hearing Michelle's take on how we make sense of this. But the thing that really, really struck me about what this is all about is the search for the lost self. That's what it comes down to. And what a beautiful metaphor I think that is.
Well, one of the questions they ask us to do early on in the chapter is, it says, you know, why are these negative traits of our parents, why do they have such appeal to us? Like, why are we looking for a mate that has that? And as Amy says, because it's the search for the lost self, it's going to help us discover that part of us that we lost. And so one of the main questions they ask us to do is to think of some part of us that we feel is deficient. And when you think of that, typically what we do is look for the person who has that thing that we thought was deficient. So for me, when I thought of that question, a part that I felt was deficient was in my family of origin, I didn't matter. What I wanted was like not only last on the list, it wasn't even on the list. So I remember early on in my relationship, my significant relationship that I had, the person that I was very attracted to was the center of the family. Everything was around him. And by being with him, I somehow had felt that I had some importance as well. So that was one of the things that I noticed in that I was seeking in a part of my lost self that I was getting by being with him.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well,
yeah, it's really interesting. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, I had done some work with Michelle, and I want to thank her for that a few weeks ago, and something that came up that I am still processing, and I know it's part of the work that we're doing here, is this I don't feel safe, which if you had asked me that, I would never have said that was true, and nor would a whole lot of people that know me, because I really overcompensate in many ways and being successful and being smart and having education, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm still in process, and I'm really grateful to have the work that we're doing to process that so I can really claim that I am safe. I'm not quite there, but I'm working on it, and doing this work together is helping to kind of unravel that so I can heal that.
Interesting. And do you think that your husband had an aspect of that lost part of yourself that attracted you?
Well, my prior husband did. It's interesting. My current husband, I think he has the same issue. but I don't think he knows he does. So I said, I'm really being with this. And I would say that we both have that in other relationships, not in our relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's like we're supporting each other in a very healthy way in facing this, but it's not coming directly from each other, but from other people in our lives.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's just really, I'm really coming to, I don't know, grips is the right word, but it's an interesting phenomena that I would not have guessed. So we're not really experiencing in that traditional way.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, because this is getting the love you want, and they talk about romantic relationships, but I think it expands to all of our relationships.
Oh, yeah.
That absolutely.
I agree with
that. It says in a moment, you can, in a glimpse, you can tell whether or not you are attracted or repelled to somebody. And I noticed that in my life. I'm just out standing in line at the grocery store and noticing whether I'm attracted or repelled. So it's happening all the time in all of our relationships. And the underlying reason is to heal those wounds. Is this somebody who can nurture me and help me heal my childhood wounds? Both of those things together. And that's
mm-hmm.
what will attract us to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who can nurture you is the person who has those positive traits that the caretakers or the significant people had. And then you're also scanning to see if they have the negative traits because then you can work it out with them. The potential to work it out with them to have a different outcome is there.
Mm-hmm. I think we should have like a internal sound machine that we, you know, when you look at somebody, you either get a ding, ding, ding or wah, wah. You know?
Yeah.
Would make life so much easier, right?
Well,
how about you? Wah, wah. Oh, okay. Never mind. Never. Okay. Have a good day.
Yeah, and it's in degrees too, because they talk about like maybe you'll be in a relationship with somebody, and then it just over time you just kind of lose interest, and the reason is because not enough of the characteristics are present to really keep your attention, so that full potential for healing the wound isn't there. It's just only there on a, like maybe one or two traits, and so gradually the people in those relationships are like, oh, I just lost interest, and they're not really a passionate relationship, and they just end because they've lost interest, not because any of great deep pain. The ones that people end their relationship because of pain is they're a better imago match. However, probably the people are working unconsciously together and not understanding how to get past the cycle of re-injuring and moving into the healing each other.
I think it would be interesting to see couples that have had major trauma happen within their relationship, whether it be adultery or just any kind of addictions, and them both choosing to do work and stay and see how that changes the amigo. Because I think that would be very interesting to see if that's something that settles out to where there's more of an understanding of being, well, because I think a lot of it's being able to ask for what you want. And we'd had the conversation before about ultimately it's not somebody else's responsibility, it's your responsibility to figure out what you need to be able to heal yourself. So in some ways, we know, we look at this book and talk about the relationships and stuff. It's pretty much just a place that can help you with recognition of places that, you know, you can basically be there to support and shift and change for yourself.
Yeah, but ultimately this book does go into, like, the supreme grace, because I've read ahead, of somebody actually offering to give the other person that which they need. It's an offering.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah,
not that they
beautiful.
Have to. It's a beautiful gift that they offer,
mm-hmm.
which is
yeah.
which is healing beyond your own self-healing. It's so deeply transforming to have another person do that for you. They say it's beyond your own self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't been there. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, too, because I know that's like the Dalai Lama talks about that when, you know, in just more in general terms, he's like, if you're sad, you know, go and cheer someone else up. If you feel like there's lack in your life, be willing to go and just be generous with someone else. It's like all those places in your life where you're feeling inadequate, give that to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And have it be something that can balance you. Yeah, so I think that's really interesting. When we did the Book of Joy, that was something that they really talked about, you know, coming to a place where there's balance just through your actions, through love and compassion and just, you know, a joyful place of offering whatever it is that you feel like there's a place of lack within yourself. So I think
that takes being conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that does take being conscious. Or that takes having a friend that you trust and really know that they're coming from a loving place and just say, right now, you need to just be grateful. All right, now, you just need to be gracious. And then you're looking like, okay, well, all right. and then, you know, depending on how that goes, you know, wah, wah. You can move on, you know, how that goes. So it's all good. I wanted to talk about, there's one section in the chapter that I really got a lot of ahas just from just the conversation. So it's a conversation that Hendricks has with a couple, and it's about talking about romantic love with Image. And he takes a husband-wife, Lynn and Peter, and goes through some different things about, you know, Lynn's life and Peter's life, particularly Lynn's life. And she talked about how Lynn's father had been profoundly she was influenced by her father, that he was a good provider, and he spared no expense on her behalf to make sure that she, you know, she had the things that she wanted. But he also was very insensitive and at times could really cause her to come from a place of fear. You know, she talks about how he would tickle her to the point where it wasn't comfortable anymore and she hated it, and he would do it anyway until she would break down and cry, and then he'd call her a crybaby. I mean, things like that. So it's ways of, like, not really being sensitive and real recognizing the other person is really trying to communicate and ignoring that. And, you know, he talked about even the idea of you know, when she was really little, that dad wouldn't warm up the bottle, her baby bottle, you know, milk bottle, before he gave it to her. And so she'd be, you know, held by him, and he would be, you know, putting this cold, you know, cold bottle into her mouth. And so it was the shock of the cold milk and everything that was going on with that kind of stuff. So it was all these radical different messages that she was getting. I'm loving you, but yet I'm putting you in this uncomfortable place. Or I'm expecting you to be, you know, in this place of being able to accept it, but yet it's not coming from a place of full just compassionate care. There's all these underlining things that are going on that just aren't quite right and are shocks to her system. I thought that was really, I hadn't really thought about that way, and I think it was really good for me to read that because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, just thinking about that, not, you know, just, you know, wondering, you know, even on a personal level, have I had those experiences and not even known that those were things that really shocked me or were things that were abusive to me as a child and I wasn't able to articulate that. So I thought that was an interesting thing. So did you guys get anything from that case?
I did. This is Michelle. Well, he was talking about that we have experiences with our parents that we probably don't even remember, but then we build an association and he was using that as an example. And I had done a meditation one time, and I discovered in my meditation that I was the youngest of four children. My mom had three boys, all a year apart, and then I was 3 years from the youngest. And when I was very, very young, in this meditation, I realized that she was unresponsive to me. She would put me, like, I don't know if I was in a pen or a crib or something, but she just wouldn't come. And I realized, like, on a certain level, she knew I was safe in there, like nothing was really going to harm me. And she was overwhelmed with my brothers, so many kids to take care of. But me as the baby in that moment, all I knew is that my mom wouldn't come. My mom didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
I cried and cried, and my mom didn't come. So there became an association with that. And how many
mm-hmm.
instances do we have where we are wounded in that way that we're not even aware of, and then we're out there looking for a mate to, you know, help us to solve these wounds, and then we, you know, get in, we fall in love with them, and they don't do it, but we're not even aware. The only reason I know that happened was because I did meditation, and I found out, you know.
Yeah, one of the other examples is she talks about how she was about 4 years old and her dad threw her in the river so she could learn how to swim. You think how many kids got thrown into water, be it a pool or whatever, at a young age? You know, that was kind of a habit that parents were doing there for a while. It's just like, well, you know, if you need to learn that stuff, just throw you in, that kind of thing.
Well,
and she talks about, you know, how could he have done that to me? She was just, it was another place where she was just shocked that, you know, at the expectation of that was supposed to toughen her up or something. And, of course, you're 4 years old. You have no idea that that's any kind of a lesson. It's just basically, I'm being thrown in water and expected to survive.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here, so Amy here. Part of, you know, and what I've experienced and with a lot of other people is that those are a little more obvious, something like, yeah, being thrown in the water. It's like what Michelle was talking about. I think that really affects us very strongly, but we don't necessarily have the critical thinker established yet when we're really young.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, you know, there isn't the, I'm this goes with this, so that makes sense. So it's all these things that are ruling your life where there's no, oh, he threw me in the water. Does that make sense, Robin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's
so
part of the brain.
Because as we're talking about, I'm thinking of other instances with, like, our dad that, you know, he wasn't happy with my behavior and he would just shame me in front of everybody. Instead of talking about it and helping me to understand what I was doing wasn't okay, he would just shame me.
Yeah.
So, you know, after a while, I remember an incident where I was with my dad, and after that interaction I had with him, I decided that I needed to hate him because he was just so mean to me that he would be willing to do that. It's like, you can't love me and treat me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically just created a relationship to where I'm you're my dad, but, you know, you're not going to hurt me.
Well, and so now it's about with that particular instance, what am I doing attracting people that replicate that in some manner, shape, or form, right? So you have the opportunity
to heal. Right, people who, you seek out people who shame you, so you can basically, you know, and that's really what we're talking about is, like, ultimately we get attracted to these people because there's this unfinished business that we can go back, you know, as an adult and be able to look at that, understand what it is. Not that it wasn't a hurtful thing or for us when we were little, but yet we understand it and understand it at a different way and be able to empower ourselves and have, instead of having it being something that is detrimental.
So let's go back to the quest we're on. The quest is to recover your lost self. So it isn't a matter of what anybody else did, but it's like, what part of me was removed when that happened? Do you understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying, Ron? So,
mm-hmm.
I understand. I don't agree with what happened, but what part of you got lost because of that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question to contemplate.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that make sense?
Well, it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
I think part of it, you know, trusting yourself to be able to express yourself and not feel like you're going to get shut down in the process because somebody's not comfortable with your behavior, even if it's something that's not, you know, crazy, right? You know, crazy and out of line. It's just something that person might be having a bad day and they don't want to deal with you. It's because it's their place with themselves.
Knowing you personally, I believe that's part of the reason you were drawn to laughter yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely,
no matter how crazy or inappropriate you are, it is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And ultimately, it helps to move through and move energy through your system, you know, through the laughter, in a way where you can get in touch with it and have it be something that you're able to just laugh, not necessarily that you're laughing at it, but just laughing because you can. So it's a way of expression and using the energy in that direction. So, but I mean, you know, that's one thing with laughter yoga. It isn't something where, you know, you bring up a heavy thing and you're going to laugh. It's not really about that. So just kind of let people know if they're not really familiar with you know, laughter yoga in itself. So anyhow, so going along with that too, you know, it's really cool because Harville goes into talking about, you know, Peter's side and how he really balances Lynn. And one of the things that I thought was great too is Harville had said that one of his professors had said, if you want to know what kind of a person a client is married to, imagine their opposite. And that's exactly what happened with this couple, that, you know, everything that was seemed to be a place where they needed growth or change or something that would help them to, you know, lift themselves up or to see themselves in a way that they needed to, that other person embodied that. So it was really, you know, the good and the bad. It was in both places, being able to look at that and be reflective about it and being able to have them be the yin-yang for each other. So is anything without the last part of that with their comparisons with their relationship you guys want to share?
Well, I'll just share that both people have to be a match. That's why the relationship happens. So it wouldn't have worked that just Peter matched what Lynn needed. Lynn also has to match what Peter needs.
Right.
So that's when the relationship takes place. So it's a two-way mm-hmm. street. Otherwise, it's just a one-way street of unrequited love. So
I'm a not a go. It's a, and that said, I'm a go. It's I'm a not a go. So there.
I'm a not a go. It's a no go. So we got a couple.
It's a no go.
So Michelle, what do you recommend people are doing with the exercises? With what we're doing.
Thank you for asking that question, because exercise number 4 is interesting because it's the childhood frustration. So when you asked Robin, you know, what happened as a result of that, like what part of her was lost as a result of what happened to her with interactions with her dad. Exercise 4 is called Childhood Frustrations, and it gives you some insight into understanding the frustration you had and how you responded, because ultimately each exercise you do is going to lead to a compilation where you get a big picture of what it is you're looking for in a relationship. So I would say up to this point, go through exercise 4.
Okay. Yeah, and we had gone through exercise 2 from the last show that we did with them. And so exercise 3 is actually a workup where you actually would do a circle with an A and a B on it with a line in the middle. And everything above the line are positive traits that you got from just your caretakers, be it your parents or babysitters, teachers, all that kind of stuff when you were little. And then A underneath are the negative aspects, the negative. And then you would go ahead and this is all in the book if you get it with the exercises. And then C, you would after you go through all those different negative and positive traits, you would put down C, and C asks you, what I wanted most as a child was and didn't get. So what I wanted most as a child and didn't get was your C, and then filling that in. And then number D was, as a child, I had these negative feelings over and over again. Which really helps you to get a picture of maybe some unconscious things that basically are just kind of sitting back in your consciousness, and being able to lovingly bring them up, look at them, and kind of see what's going on with all that, and then being able to go ahead and move all that information over to 4, like the frustrations that Michelle is sharing with us. So really good stuff, very, very good stuff. And as Amy, I'd really encourage, you know, get a friend or a small group of people and, you know, start working with the information. It's something really great when you can feel like you can have a few safe people that you can share just different situations and circumstances that you've had in your life and be able to walk through it in a way where you're really feeling heard and nurtured as you walk through it. And then having people question you about something, like Amy was doing with me about, you know, what was that like for you and, you know, where are you now with that? I think those are really good questions to be able to, like, I can come up with answers now instead of just pushing it away and having it be something that was a negative in my life. You know, what are my insights about that now that really I can look at myself in a new way about that? So anything else you guys want to share?
Yeah, I think it's really important to do the exercises because that's where the growth is going to come. Just reading it isn't going to make the changes.
So through exercise four, it's really more getting clarity on those frustrations. And then exercise five, I'm very excited about, because you really start dancing with it, yes? Is that true, Michelle?
I haven't done exercise five yet, so...
Five is because the parent-child dialogue is designed to help you deepen your memory of your child and increase your empathy for each other. And so you have a dialogue with that person. So
interestingly enough, we have a different exercise in the original book.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to clarify.
Yeah, exercise five is actually called it's the partner profile.
So maybe off air we can talk about it, and then I think that would be nice to do the one that you have. I don't even see that one in here.
All right, well then I will share that one with you offline. Interesting.
Is it called Unfinished Business?
It is called Parent-Child Dialogue.
Oh, but yeah, I don't even know if there's one.
Somebody
we'll have to share our exercises, see what's going on with everything. So that's another good reason why having multiple editions is really good, because depending on what Harville were doing as they, if that's one thing, this is ongoing research, this is ongoing growth with their original concepts when they put the book together, and they're finding new ways of being able to work with the information all the time, which I think is really great for everybody. So it helps you to dive in. I'm going to do the exercises. It's a good thing to
do. All right. Well, I will share number five with you guys.
I'm going to be an amigo with my imago, and I'm a go.
I'm a go.
So thank you both for joining us here, as always. And I also want to thank our international group, our International Cafe members. We just really enjoy you. Any questions and comments, we love to hear from you. And as always, we want to thank you for joining us here at the Cafe. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.